Thank you to Kevin again. We're back here. It's been a few weeks, I think, since we were here, right? So thank you again for having us come. I wanted to talk about, obviously, the 9 days are coming up right now. It's a couple days before Rosh Chodesh Av, and starting on Friday through next week, the 9 days in Shavuot Shechalbo of Tisha B'Av, the week of Tisha B'Av, or this year might not actually be the week of Tisha B'Av, but the week before Tisha B'Av obviously has, you know, very important significance both halachically and hashkafically. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about both. So we'll start with a little bit of machshava. Some of this actually my wife said, some of these ideas my wife actually said over at the women's shir this past Shabbos afternoon, which I guess none of you were at, obviously, but maybe your wives were there. So just one or two ideas to think about. We already mentioned something about this last week, and I'll just do a little bit more this week. The first point, I think if I remember correctly, this is what we talked a little bit about last week, is what exactly are we davening for? Meaning, when we mourn for the destruction of the temple and we want it back. So what exactly is that which we are desiring to get back? Okay, what's so special about getting the Beis HaMikdash back? It's very nice, but, you know, face it, is the reality that we want to go slaughter animals and, you know, bring it in a very primitive, you know, type of environment. I don't know if it'd be primitive, we don't know exactly what's going to be used, so we don't know what's going to happen, but the question is that all there is to it, just bringing back korbanos, or is it more than that in terms of trying to get the Beis HaMikdash back? Is it more of a state of mind or an entire difference in society? What does he say?
As long as you're slaughtering animals, it's all good.
It's all good. Uh-huh. What does he mean by that?
He's a meat eater.
Oh, he's a meat eater. I see. Okay, I got it. Okay. All right. More slaughtering, the better. Okay, so I want to suggest that I think this is true, that it's not just an issue of, you know, bringing back the avodah on the Beis HaMikdash and bringing back korbanos. Part of what we mourn for during this time period and part of what we, you know, wish to come back is really, you know, a major distinction between what we call Golus and Geula. Okay, again, you can find this through the writings of many, many different, you know, Jewish thinkers about Golus versus Geula. But just two points, which I guess a lot of them really talk about, and just throw out some ideas at you. One is the idea of Shivud Malchios. Okay, the idea that we are during this time period where we are now Golus, even if we're here in Eretz Yisrael, but we are oftentimes subjugated and subject to the whim and to the desire of other rulers and other governments. Okay, there, you know, certainly if you live outside of Israel, you have to follow the government where you are. Hopefully, you know, you live in a country where they're pretty nice to the Jews, which, you know, thank God some places are today. But you're always subject to other people, and if they want you to do something and they insist on it and they force you with their police force, whatever, then, you know, you basically don't have much of a choice. You can do it. You can try to get out of it, but it's not simple.
Germany, no brit milah.
Yeah, I mean, those are, you know, there's tons of examples throughout history. You meant right now? I thought. I see. They want to disallow brit milah in Germany. Wow.
Yeah. They were talking about trying to make distinction for the Jews, but they made a law.
Wow.
It's on the news in Israel, right?
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so let's follow that story. But unfortunately, this time of year, we know already that the 3 weeks and the 9 days is a time period which, unfortunately, you know, bad things sometimes happen to the Jewish people. We have to be prepared for that. And the truth is, unfortunately, here in Eretz Yisrael, this also is the case, as we also have seen, you know, recently and in past years, that you're going to thank God most of the time the government lets, you know, religious Jews do what they want and are very supportive. But at certain times, even depending on, regardless of how you feel, whether settlement building and, you know, fighting to the, you know, nail to tooth for, you know, not getting kicked out or for buildings being destroyed in different parts of the shtachim, regardless of how you feel, whether that's, you know, that's appropriate or not, in light of the, you know, Joshua, your sister's talk this past Shabbos. But either way, I think the point is clear that in our context, even here in Eretz Yisrael, we're still subject to the will of the government in certain situations. If the government decides that they want to send the army to come and do X, Y, Z, to kick you out or do this and that, you know, unfortunately, you know, again, Hashem can decide what he wants, but at the end of the day, you know, we see that it's not that easy to get out of it. Okay, it's very difficult to fight. Okay, that doesn't mean it's impossible. It doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't want it, but it means that it's very difficult to fight the government. So therefore, it's certainly in Chutz Laaretz and here in Eretz Yisrael as well, this concept of Shivud Malchios still exists. Okay. So in the times of Mashiach, even though it's true that there actually is a debate about exactly how much of God's hand will we actually see in the open during the times of Mashiach, that's the whole discussion of whether, you know, it's there are going to be miracles. Is this, you know, the fabric of nature going to change? There's a pasuk, famous pasuk in Yeshaya, whether the you know, God is Avim Kevis, the sheep is going to live together with the wolf. So that's obviously against nature today. But is that meant to be literally, or is it meant to be figuratively? So either way, and there are different opinions about it, either way, everybody agrees, including the Rambam, who's, you know, the natural one, everybody agrees that there will be no more Shivud Malchus, meaning that the Jews will not suffer, that we will not be subject to the desires and the impositions of other governments. Which basically means we are free entirely, 100%, to do exactly as we're supposed to according to the Torah. Okay? Certainly, you know, in terms of enemies, and, you know, in this country, of, you know, people, all the countries around us that want to kill us, etc., etc., there will be calm, comfort everywhere. It's a very, very different kind of existence. Okay? Again, there's a lot more to say about that, but just to keep things brief, that's a very, very important thing, which when you go through, and we'll talk about this on Tisha B'Av, obviously, at the kinos, many of the kinos relate to the destruction through Jewish history. Pogroms and other things, not just in times of the Beis Hamikdash, but also through Europe. There are kinos for the Holocaust and other types of events. And, you know, part of the point is this idea that the Beis Hamikdash and its destruction are all the source for our suffering today and for the Shivud Malchus, the fact that we are subject to other governments. And that's what we're trying to bring back when we daven for the Beis Hamikdash to return. It's not just the Beis Hamikdash, it's the whole context around it of God basically being able to control and to for us to do what we're supposed to be doing completely without having to worry about in the process. That's number one. Number two, the other point I just wanted to mention briefly is, this I think also maybe I mentioned briefly about last time, is the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? Hashem's presence is supposed to be felt here on earth, but, you know, it's not always the case. Okay? In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, so that was, according to many commentaries, that was the place, and that was the reason for building a Beis HaMikdash in the first place, was to show the location of Hashem's divine presence. That's where we see it. In the Beis HaMikdash, again, people had to come a number of times a year to keep continuously remind themselves of this fact. That's why there is a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel to come three times a year. People had to absorb, and they had to stay overnight. They had to absorb the experience, no matter where they lived in Eretz Yisrael. So unfortunately, when the temple was destroyed, we were robbed of that one location over the globe where, at the time, Hashem's presence and his miracles were obvious and could be seen by everybody. Unfortunately, Hashem today and the Shekhinah seem more and more remote, hard to find. Today, there are a lot of people out there that believe that in order to become intimate with God, you require intense study of mystical works such as the Zohar, Kabbalah, writings of the Arizal, maybe a little bit of Rabbi Nachman, depending on your direction. But they feel that those are the things that you need in order to achieve any type of intimacy with God. But an average Jew, you know, can't necessarily find that. With the exception, again, of the breast lovers, who seem to be best dafka, every Jew that can do it. But again, it's the same idea that those that look at, you know, the breast love to be like, you have to go for Rabbi Nachman in order to be able to get close to God, and think they're crazy. You know, maybe not. But again, the idea that the perception that it's very difficult to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu today is not the way that it's supposed to be. Okay, what we really want and we really need is a world where we all feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we see him, and we can just go out there and talk to him easily, seeing that he's there, not feeling you're talking to the winds and, you know, nothing is there to respond to you. That's a very, very important part of the times of Yemos Mashiach, and that's, I think, part of also what we daven for when we want these times to come back, and what we mourn for on Tisha B'Av. We're mourning for the lack of that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Aaron Cutler, in one of his farm, Mishnas Rabbi Aaron, his example of this was Yom Kippur. Yeah, that was the day, that very charged, tense atmosphere. The people were waiting, they watched the Kohen Gadol prepare, do all the things he had to do beforehand. They watched him go into the Kodesh Kadoshim, the Kohanim, you know, bowed down to the floor, etc., etc. But they were actually able to see certain things that happened. They saw the Kohen Gadol come out, they saw that the red string that they had, that according to tradition, it turned white if their sins were forgiven, etc., etc. They were actually able to see signs to show that Hashem had forgiven them. Okay, we, you know, when we recite Mara Kohen on Yom Kippur, That's, you know, if you get into it, look at all the amazing things that happened. If you look through the pew carefully, you'll see a lot of things that the people celebrated, and they were able to see that, you know, that Hashem had forgiven them. Today, as we see in the davening of Yom Kippur, it's all missing. Okay, and that's exactly after that point. And on Yom Kippur, the davening changes. It plunges straight from Mara Kohen and straight from, you know, all the discussions about the Kohen Gadol and the Avodah and the Beis Hamikdash. It plunges straight into Tisha B'Av, basically. Plunges into the story of the Asar HaRuri Malchus, the times of the Romans, when the Jews were tortured, you know, they were tortured and suffered, etc., etc., which is, again, very parallel to the Asar HaRuri Malchus discussion, the ten great sages that were killed, which is part of the Tisha B'Av Kinos as well. That's what we're missing. Okay, we're all missing it today. We need to recreate that feeling as much as possible, but it's hard. It's a recreation. We're missing the real connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where do we have a place that we can connect to Hashem in the same way? Okay, yes, we have the Kotel, and that's great. But again, the Kotel is a feeling. It's not something that you can see or put your finger on. That's what we need back, and that's what we mourn for, and that's what we daven for. That's what we hope for bringing back the times of old in the comings of Mashiach. Okay, well, that's what we're looking for. Again, how to get to that? How do we get ourselves into that mentality to daven for that? That we'll have to leave for next time. We'll talk about that a little more next week. Let's talk about the halachos a little bit. There's a lot of halachos that have to do with the 9 days. So let's see what we can cover. First thing is, let's look at the difference between Rosh Chodesh Av, and we call Shavuot Shechal Bo. The first couple things we'll look at very briefly are related to Rosh Chodesh Av. You look at your Shulchan Aruch Mishnah Berurah. So in Tav Kuf Nun Aleph. Okay. So we look at Tav Kuf Nun Aleph Tuf Aleph. So he says here, the Shulchan says, "Mishnechnas Av Matzim B'Simcha." When Av comes, we reduce our level of Simcha. That's famous quote from the Mishnah in Tanis. And the question is, how does that play itself out in these halachos? What aspects of these halachos relate to Rosh Chodesh Av specifically, and what aspects of these halachos relate more to what we call Shavuot Shechal Bo, the week of Tisha B'Av? Okay. So we'll see that there are some things that follow the first category and some things that follow the second category. For most Ashkenazim, as we'll see, most Ashkenazim are machmir that the rules of Shavuot Shechal Bo already apply at the beginning of Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so basically all the rules that we'll talk about of eating meat and washing clothes and all those things according to for Ashkenazic tradition, we're machmir already from Rosh Chodesh. But Sfarim are already machmir, are makil after Rosh Chodesh until Shavuot Shechal Bo. Okay. This year, there's an interesting question of what exactly is classified as Shavuot Shechal Bo. Meaning, Shavuot Shechal Bo is usually the week that Tisha B'Av falls out on. Okay, so this week, this year, Tisha B'Av falls out on Sunday. So Tisha B'Av, right? The 9th of Av is Shabbos. We observe Tisha B'Av on Sunday as Yud B'Av. So the question is, what's the status of Shavuot Shechal Bo this year? Is the entire week before Tisha B'Av, meaning next week, is that week considered to be Shavuot Shechal Bo or not? So again, for Ashkenazim, there are a few minor details this might affect. For Sfarim, this is a major thing, because either they've got to be machmer and everything just like us, Ashkenazim, or they have it free the whole week. They have nothing, pretty much. I shouldn't say nothing, but again, you know, they miss a lot of what Ashkenazim have. So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch and see if Dawud, the Shulchan Aruch and Siv Dalad has two opinions about this. It says, "The La'achar Tanis Mutzar L'Saper L'Chabes Miad." Okay, that's not really our topic right now. It's already jumping, but it's the first line of the Shulchan Aruch, so we'll read it. He says, "After Tisha B'Av, it's permitted to get haircuts and to wash your clothes immediately." Okay, that's actually again a subject of discussion. Halacha L'Maisa for Ashkenazim, it's not so simple. Ashkenazim probably have to wait until Chatzos the next day at least. But that's what he says here.
What's
that?
Not this year.
This year also you have to wait. No, I'm sorry, you're right. Yeah, so Ashkenazim, so again, maybe that night you can... We'll talk about it. Okay, we'll talk about it next week. So next week, one of the shirim probably for the Omion will be about aspects of Shabbos that falls out on Tisha B'Av. But you're right, meaning this year already Yud Av is the day, so that you're right, that will change things a little bit. Then he says, "V'imchalti Shabbat v'Shabbos v'nimchel achar Shabbos mutar b'shtei Shabbosos." Okay, let's say that Tishba falls out on Sunday or falls out on Shabbos and it's pushed off to Sunday, so it's permitted to wash your clothes and to get haircuts on both weeks. Bein shekodem atanis, bein shacharav. Okay, both before the Tanis, meaning next week, the week before Tisha B'Av, and also afterwards. The Yesh Mishaomer Shanagu Lesser Kol Shavu Shalapav. And some people say that the custom is to forbid the entire week before Tisha B'Av, Chutz B'Yom Chamish B'Yom Shish, except for Thursday and Friday, where maybe you could be a little bit more lenient when it comes to washing clothes or taking haircuts, L'Kavod Shabbos, at least in the Sephardic tradition. So that's, again, for Sephardim, there are two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch here about exactly what the story is with Shavu Shechalvo on a year like this. And the custom is generally accepted for Sephardim, you know? Yeah. And, cliffhanger for you.
You don't need to. It says, what year should use what these?
Exactly. So that's basically what most Sephardic postgames say. Is that since the first opinion of the Shulchan Aruch is the anonymous, the standard one, and then the second one is, you know, Yesh Meish Omer, some people say, so in this situation we generally follow the first opinion. Okay? And therefore here, this is the ruling of the Ben Ish Chai and the Kaf HaChaim, and I think this is the standard accepted practice for Sephardim, that that the week before Tisha B'Av, when Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos or Sunday, you do not have to keep the restrictions of Shavu Shechalvo. So you're off the hook, guy. Okay, next week, Sephardim, generally most Sephardim are making up the entire week. Okay? Again, Ashkenazim are a little more machmir, which in most cases anyway it doesn't really matter because Ashkenazim are starting from Rosh Chodesh Av. There are a few minor details that Ashkenazim also might distinguish between Shavu Shechalvo and before that. So Ashkenazim, for those details, might be a little more machmir. That Shavu Shechalvo does start the week before, at least for certain situations. Okay. All right. Let's go back to Rosh Chodesh Av now. So if you look... If you look at Siv Aleph and Siv Beis, so what are some of the things that are forbidden already that we don't do from Rosh Chodesh Av? This is according to everybody now, meaning Sephardim and Ashkenazim. So the first thing in the Shulchan Aruch and Siv Aleph, he says that, again, a Jew who has a famous thing, a Jew who has a bar yisrael d'islay dina v'harinachar, if he has a court case with a non-Jew, l'shtamei minei, d'rei ha-mazle, he should not do it during this month, during Av, at least until Tisha B'Av, or at least until Tu B'Av. Because Rea Mazle, okay, it's his mazel is bad, meaning this is not a good time period for the Jews. And it's already, you know, could be decreed in Shemayim that there's more of a chance that things are going to go wrong for you. And therefore, already from Rosh Chodesh Av, one should delay such type of court cases with a non-Jew. Okay, that's number one. Again, this is pretty well known. Number two, we could discuss this a little bit more, is the following. Okay, if you look in Siv Beis, okay, Siv Beis, we see the following. The Rosh Chodesh Av Tanis b'matzin b'masa u'matzan u'binyan shel simcha. Okay, we have two aspects here that, again, according to everybody, have to be taken into account already from Rosh Chodesh Av. And number one is masa u'matzan. How would you translate masa u'matzan?
Business.
Okay, what does business mean?
Deals.
Does it mean work? Does it mean going out shopping at the mall?
What
is it? So literally, masa u'matzan means negotiations. The question is, what's the context here and how far does it go? Meaning in those days, most people that were working, you know, were
buying
in business. Yeah, they were buying and selling things. Okay, they had trades, this and, you know, all sorts of different things. Today, things work a little differently. Today, you sit in an office for 20 hours or whatever it is. Is that included? And, you know, together with that, when you're not actually working, you're just going and, you know, you're buying things and you're going to the store and you buy things by, you know, who knows what. So are those things included in this this halacha, the Shulchan Aruch of Matan? So here, basically, there's a few different approaches, a few different, you know, points here that we that we'll mention. First, if you look at the Mishnah Berurah in Sif Katan Yud Aleph, okay. So the Mishnah Berurah in Sif Katan Yud Aleph says the following. He says, "Yesh min haposkim desvir lehu dahainu shelo yisa b'masa umatan shel simcha." Okay, some posts can say that this means that one should not basically go through business dealings of simcha. What does that mean? Basically, in this case, he's using this to refer to, to shopping. Okay, buying silver utensils or things that you need for a chuppah, okay, meaning for wedding, etc., etc. That's according to the Mishnah Berurah, the first opinion here that he's quoting from Poskim in the Rishonim. Some say that what's mainly referred to here is, you know, basically shopping for things that are really, you know, pleasurable or exciting to get. Okay. But normal business dealings, meaning what we would call today basically your normal work, and maybe even, you know, normal shopping for food or normal shopping for, you know, household day-to-day needs does not, according to the first opinion, is not, you don't have to reduce at all. The second opinion is more machmer. The second opinion holds that all business dealings have to be reduced during this time. And all you have to do, all you're allowed to do is make the amount of money that you need in order to live. Which again, you know, in those days is a little easier to understand if you were, let's say, a grocery store owner or, you know, a shop owner. So basically you can close your store, you know, halfway through the day if you made enough money. There's famous stories about the Chafetz Chaim. But he didn't do so well as a grocer because he either would be busy learning in the middle when people came, or he would, you know, basically close his store when he had enough food for the day, and that would be it. Okay? Go learn.
I heard that there was competition that was concerned they wouldn't give me business because I wanted to go to the shop and have a couple of times twice.
And that's all, you're right. I think that also might be true. That also might be true. I mean, they're all true. But anyway, so today, I guess it's hard to see how that would be. But again, if it means putting in more hours or whatever it would be, the second opinion basically holds that you can you have to reduce the amount of regular business dealings that you have today as well, not just that of Simcha. Okay, so these are the two opinions in the poskim when it comes to this. Lamaisa, if you look at the conclusion of the Mishnah Berurah, so he says in the last line there, okay, today's times, already in the Mishnah Berurah's times, and certainly today, the custom is to be mekel. Okay, everything that we do today for business is considered to be for our parnasa. And therefore, again, this is the custom today as well, that people don't, you know, stop working in the middle of the day or whatever it is. People work the normal things they need to work. People buy the normal things they need to buy. Okay? That's generally accepted today, that it's is permitted. Okay? The question is, which things might still be usher according to the custom today? Did you have a comment? Or? What did you say? Oh. Okay, so buying a suit anyway might be usher during the entire 3 weeks because of Shachianu.
You make sure you buy it when you write the first time.
That's machlokas suppose.
Okay.
Generally,
I think it's
yeah. So for Ashkenazim, generally make a shach. I shouldn't say everybody does this, but the more accepted approach for Ashkenazim is to make a shachin when you buy it, unless it needs major. If it needs major adjustments, then maybe not.
Okay.
But if you basically would pretty much wear it as you do as it's bought, then you would make the shachin when you buy it. If you didn't, then you can make it when you wear it.
Okay.
I think for Sfaradim, it's more so to make it, to buy it, so to make the bracha when you wear it. Is that right?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But,
it could be. I don't remember offhand. I think what I said is right, but I might be wrong. I didn't check. So it could be that I'm mixing it up. Check. Okay. So that's a story that, in terms of that, but certainly during the 9 days, certainly from Rosh Chodesh Av already, it would definitely be Aser. Okay. The examples that I saw being discussed for things that are Simcha. So, again, these are interesting examples. Certainly buying a new suit for no good reason, other than just getting a new suit, is probably included. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this, which I don't have here, obviously, but it's in Or Chaim Chel Gimel Siman Pei. He has a couple examples of things that he felt were included in Simcha. His examples were buying a new car. He felt air conditioning, curtains, a new dryer, all these things were included as well. I don't know. Today, one can make a case that if those are things that you really need, that, you know, it may be that they give you Simcha, but it's not... You know, today it could be that especially during the summertime, you know, air conditioning is not something that gives you simcha. It's something that just gives you, you know, just being able to survive the summer. At least with our standards today, you know, it's just, I can't survive without my air conditioning, you know. Again, we're different than 100 years ago. They managed. They you know, got by with a lot less, and we're spoiled today. So for somebody today who doesn't have an air conditioner in their house to buy an air conditioner, I'm not sure if that would be included in you know, in element of in the same type of simcha if it's, you know, if it's really hot outside. Same thing for a dryer for those people that don't just hang their clothes up outside. You know, without a dryer, it's very hard to wash clothes and have them, you know, ready to wear very soon afterwards. So again, that also may not be included in simcha, but you get the idea. Okay, major purchases like this, which give a person pleasure, are generally included. So again, if you're just buying a car because you want to buy a car, not because you have no car to drive right now, you know, certainly that would make sense. That would be included. Buying a new suit, unless it's absolutely necessary for right then, would probably be included. Other kinds of expensive, you know, things that you buy for your house that are not immediately necessary. What'd you say? Jewelry, for sure. Okay, jewelry, other things like that, for sure would be included. Any of these kinds of things would be included in the halacha of simcha. Okay. The Mishnah Berurah points out the line that we skipped in the brackets there. He does say if it's a yarid, okay, if it's like a special sale, So he says, Yesh lomar d'hari davar ha'avad. It's considered to be a davar ha'avad, meaning that you'll lose out on the special sale otherwise. V'shar b'chol inyanim hu matzei az b'zol yoser. Then it's permitted. Okay, meaning even if it's something which is b'simcha, it gives you simcha, if it's a special sale that you won't get, you know, later afterwards, you'll miss out. So then he says it's permitted because it's like chol hamoed, where you see if you would lose that at a great opportunity, so then it's permitted to buy something like that in a chol hamoed as well. So here also, again, you have to be honest about it, okay? And it could be that if you're not sure, it's wise to consult, you know, with the Rav, just to make sure that you're not what we call being mora hetzer for yourself. Okay, you may think, yeah, I think it's fine, and, you know, you might be right, but at the same time, you may be trying to, you know, push something through which is maybe not so appropriate, so you have to, you know, just be careful about that point, that it's really a sale, and again, it has, obviously can't be just a couple shekel or a couple dollars difference. It's gotta be a significant, you know, significant sale in order to, you know, l'chora, in order to make a difference. Many postmen say, by the way, in terms of buying svarim, that that is permitted to buy svarim during this time. The Ramah says that that it's permitted to buy things for simcha purposes, sorry, for mitzvah purposes. This is the end of the Ramah, the middle, the Ramah in the middle of Siv Beis. Okay, we didn't read all the examples inside. We'll read them in a second after the building. But right after that, the Ramah says, "Ulatzorach mitzvah hakol shari." For mitzvah, everything is permitted. So the Piskei Tshuvos and others, you know, apply that and say that svarim, you know, to learn from is considered to be a mitzvah, and therefore, if you have an opportunity to buy svarim during this time, then it's not a problem. And I heard Rav Shachter also heard him say once directly that he also felt that was permitted. And assuming that you're using the svarim, it's not just for show; it's, you know, it's to learn with, and certainly it's a mitzvah, and it'll be mitzvah according to everybody. If you have that, question, all right. Any comments or questions so far? No, I'm good. Okay, next one. Building or planting. So how do we deal with this? So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it's the next case here of Binyan Shel Simcha. We generally reduce, we don't build things which are involve Simcha during from the time period of Rosh Chodesh Av and onwards. So his examples here are obviously not very practical today, but he gives you a sense of what they are. Kegon Beis Chasnas Livno, you build a wedding house for your son, or Binyan Shel Tzior V'Chiyur, okay? Which again is, you know, opportunity to paint or make a nice house, basically, something or an extension to your house, which involves, you know, making it look nice. Uvenetia shel simcha, planting something for pleasure. Kegon avarna kishal malachim shenotim letzel istof petzilo. Okay, some sort of, you know, nice plant that they used to, or tree they used to plant for the kings that they would put there to have, you know, a nice amount of shade, like a luxurious type of place to, you know, to sit and enjoy themselves. Omine hadas, umine ahalim, or kinds of hadas, or other types of tents. And anything which is, you know, designed for pleasure is generally to be avoided to build during this time period. However, he says, v'imaya kathlo, no tevli pul, but if your wall is falling down, if your wall is about to collapse, afa bishu shel simcha, even if it's a wall which is used for a simcha purpose, or, you basically use for a place that you use for pleasure rather than for, you know, necessity, he says it's permitted to build. Okay, because again, we don't require your wall to collapse in order to, you know, to keep this halacha. Okay, as long, even if it's for simcha, but if the point of the building is for, you know, construction to make sure that it's safe, everything permitted.
What about planting flowers?
Okay, so hold on a second. So we'll get that in just a minute.
And then you're going to get to also painting your house.
Yeah, so we'll get to that very briefly. Again, we'll deal with all these things very, very quickly. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them, but very briefly. Okay, there is a big discussion, even for building, which is not simcha building, meaning it's not necessarily a structure which is for simcha, there is a discussion about exactly, you know, what the parameters are, what's forbidden and what's permitted. If you look in the Mishnah Berurah, in Sif Katan Yid Beis, so this is the way we generally follow today, he says, in the very beginning of Sif Katan Yid Beis, he says, V'hu adin kol binyan she'ein sarach lo v'diraso. The same thing is true, meaning binyan shel simcha, that applies, the prohibitions of that apply as well to any kind of building which is not necessary for him to live in right now. For raksha usakim harvacha bi'alma, you only do it for harvacha, you have to have another place, you can have a vacation home, or to have, you know, another opportunity to do something, or an extra room to use, you know, when you feel like it. But it's not something that which you need of necessity right now, even if it's not necessarily for pleasure. Even if it's not vacation, it's not actually pleasure. It's something which is harvacha, you know, to make a little money, to rent out, or whatever it is. Anything which is not necessary for right now, in general, should not be built during this time period. That's generally what's accepted here, and that's what the Mishnah Berurah says. Based on that, again, just to give some rough cases. Obviously, there could be more, but the rough cases that basically we would allow are, again, anything which is necessary to live in right now. Okay, so if you don't have a house, you're getting kicked out, and your house is not finished yet, you need to, you know, let's say you're moving into to a new house, and that's your place, and it's not done yet, so obviously in that case, you know, there's room to be a little bit more lenient. But anything extra, okay, let's say a patio, garden, get an extra home, any of these kinds of cases where it's not really necessary for right now, in general, that should not be done during this time period. One other point I just mentioned that there is a discussion if you're not doing it yourself, you're asking a non-Jew to do it for you. Okay, you have non-Jewish workers that are working for you, does that make it any better? So the Mishnah Berurah here in the same Sifkatan as before, right on the very next line, he says, "V'im sachar l'nachri kodem Rosh Chodesh b'kablonas mutar b'kol." He says, if you hire a non-Jew before Rosh Chodesh Av to basically do a project, his project was to build you a house, his project was to make it a second floor for you, or anything like that, he says it's permitted. Why? And even a tishu of itself, this is permitted, because he works for himself. Okay, the non-Jew does it for himself. Meaning, as long as you didn't tell him specifically to work during this time period, he's got a job to do, he's got to finish the job at some point, then halachically in that case, he'll be permitted to let him continue working. And that's why you can have people that are in the middle of building houses, and you see that all the Arab workers are still working, they're still building the houses during the time period of the beginning of Av. Okay? Even though the Jews are not allowed to build, but the non-Jews are, you know, hired to do the project, they're not hired specifically to work during this day, and therefore in that type of situation, it's generally permitted to let him continue building during that time, as long as he can choose to work basically, you know, when he wants, you know, obviously with limits, but in general he's not have set guidelines, he has to work, you know, on this day or on that day.
I think we were doing this in the past, and basically the answer, I don't recall correctly, was like, well, you're living through a construction zone, it's not like you're besimcha. I would have done your besimcha, but the whole process of working, you know, tearing down walls and smashing things and plastering, it's like, there's nothing with besimcha until it's done. So it's like, if it's like a day, it's a project you get done quickly, that's one thing, but if like you start a project, say, in this time of year, and it's not done for another month, and it's done for men and Jews, I think, it's our problem.
So again, I would certainly agree with that for the part of the non-Jews issue. I think that would, you know, which is certainly in the United States, is almost always going to be non-Jews that are doing it. I think that would certainly be mutter based on what we're saying.
So is there anything about, you know, what brings the simcha? Is it the...
So I didn't see specifically in terms of that. My impression would be not like what you said, but again, that doesn't mean that it's not 100% set. No, that doesn't mean there couldn't be another opinion about it, because that's not 100% set in stone. I mean, what they seem to be talking about here is any building of any place. I mean, my impression from what we read before, I just read you what we read here, my impression is that the simcha is caused by the building. Okay, I mean, yes, it's annoying to live through a construction zone, but at the end of the day, you know that you're getting something really special out of it, and therefore it's worth it to live through that, you know, horror for, you know, a few months or a few weeks, because at the end you're going to have a nice, beautiful basement, or a nice, beautiful kitchen, or a nice, beautiful bathroom, whatever the case might be. My impression would be that that's still considered to be binyan shel simcha, and that by itself, you know, would not be enough to be matzer, even if, you know, it's causing difficulty. That would be my impression. But again, that it's not 100% clear, and there certainly could be room for another opinion. Just looking at the Piskei Tshuva here for a minute to see if he says anything else. I don't think he says anything different, but he doesn't specifically address your question directly. But I thought that was what's assumed. But again, if you're dealing with non-Jewish workers, so that usually would solve the problem. That usually make it easier. Okay, so that's the next question. Is painting and decorating considered to be the same thing as building when it comes to this issue? So here, there seem to be different opinions, possibly different opinions about this. My impression is that the more accepted opinion is that it's a problem, that we're machmir. Rav Moshe has a chew about this also, in Orach Chaim Chela Gimel, Simon Pebez. So Rav Moshe seems to say that it's a problem, meaning he felt that that's the same thing as building. Okay, building is not just building. Building means any type of improvements, you know, home improvements, I guess we'll call it, which certainly would include painting and decorating. And there you have less of the hassle, possibly, of, you know, actually building. It makes sense according to that, you know, that you'd be machmer. That's what he says.
The premise is that you're building something for your own personal enjoyment. Let's say you wanted to put up a new shul.
So for mitzvah purposes, everybody agrees that it's permitted. Okay, for a shul or any mikvah, anything like that, which is for a mitzvah, it's completely permitted. Okay, no restrictions. Right, that's going to be the.
Is there a mitzvah of building a house in Eretz Yisrael?
That's a good question. So, from what I remember, I have to look. Again, he doesn't talk about this here so much, but I think the Israeli post, especially the Tilumi ones, and again, I have to check this, but my impression is that a lot of them are mekel when it comes to building houses in Eretz Yisrael, because building a house in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah, especially, this might have been the case that I saw, if I remember, is especially in the where you have questions, well, we better build, otherwise they're going to take it away from us. Even if we do build, they still take it away from us, you know. But, what'd you say?
Yehuda
B'Shem Ron. Shtachim, right.
Correct.
I see, okay, sorry. All right, we'll call whatever you want.
Judea and Samaria.
For the settlements, get the settlers. Right. Yeah. So that I think the posts from here are generally a little bit more inclined to be lenient about that, because you're right, there is a special mitzvah of building things here in Eretz Yisrael. So there's a little more room to be making about that. That wouldn't necessarily, you know, be true for painting and decorating necessarily, but certainly for building, if you're actually building on a plot of land, you know, that might be more true. In the Piskei Tshuva, so he also wants to say that it's appropriate to be machmir for painting and decorating. He quotes a few other makaros as well to say that. He says, though, he points out that if you already started the project before Shivas or Batanas, then he felt for you know, home improvements specifically, not necessarily building, but for home improvements, he felt that that maybe you can finish the project during the 3 weeks, which is sort of what you asked before, but not exactly. And then your case was building, this is decorating.
Maybe
it's
time
beforehand. Okay.
I would correct then by putting a splotch of paint on the wall, see if they could look nice with canister on and you paint your house or not.
I don't, yeah.
Right.
Okay. So that it could be that's okay if you started before Shivas or Matamas. That's what they want to say here. This is based on the Elio Rabbah in the name of the Maharil. If you started from Rosh Chodesh, that wouldn't be okay. So that, again, that could be another factor. But again, I'm not sure whether it's the same thing in terms of building versus decorating there, because decorating and painting to begin with is not clear that that's included. So there are, you know, a few factors to Nakil. I don't know if the other rabbi would say the same thing when it comes to actual building or not. Unfortunately, I don't have an other rabbi at home, so I can't look it up, but I'll see if I can find it. See, maybe he actually talked about building. Let's take a look. They also point out, of course, that if something is wrong, if there's, you know, leaks in your house or other problems, you know, that obviously need fixing, certainly is permitted. That's, again, not simcha. That's certainly something which is necessary in order to live. That's permitted. Even if, you know, you could wait a week or two, it's still, if the purpose is to fix the house because there's a problem, then it's mutter. Okay? One last point about this. There's an interesting discussion in the poskim also about whether you can move houses during the 9 days. Okay? Can you move in somewhere during the 9 days? Again, it's not necessarily... it's not necessarily included in the rules. The rules are building, maybe painting and decorating. Moving in is not really the same thing. So Maker Adin, it seems like it probably should be permitted because you haven't actually violated any of these things. That's for sure. Moving is not very much fun. That we know for sure. Okay. The Makor Chaim, written by the Chavos Yair, so he says, again, that it's mutter basically as long as you're not doing it for harvacha bialma, as long as you're not doing it, you know, just because, you know, for luxury purposes, you're doing it because you need to move, he says it's mutter. Yitzchak Yosef, I saw quoted in the Rav Harari Sefer, the Green Book, the Mikrai Kodesh, he also felt that it's permitted. However, in the Piskei Tshuva, so they quote a number of Gedolim. I don't know who these Gedolim were, but some of these Gedolim wanted to suggest that it's appropriate to refrain from moving during this time period if there's no monetary loss. Again, simply because it doesn't seem to be the right, you know, mentality. It's not the right environment, atmosphere for moving, especially if you're moving into a house that you own, even more so. You know, it does create a sense of simcha. So even if it's not, you know, strictly on the, it's not strictly on the books, but they say that maybe it's, you know, better to refrain. And again, even though Mikra did its mutter, it seems to be that this is the widespread custom. Okay? I think people in general today do not generally move during you know, the 9 days. If you had to, obviously, if you're being kicked out, it's certainly mutter, but again, most people find, you know, usually, you know, they usually move afterwards. Okay, that seems to be my experience, is that it's usually people refrain from doing that.
So we're actually moving just after the 9 days.
Ah.
But we'll probably have to do things like plastering and patching holes and things like that, then that doesn't sound like it would be the
I don't think it'd be a problem. Yeah, I don't think that's a problem. Meaning it's you need a place to live afterwards, that's considered to be fixing up a house. That should be fine.
Leaving.
Right. You for sure have to. You have an obligation to leave it in good condition.
Right.
You know, when you leave. So that's okay. Last points here. What about planting gardens? So again, included in the same category here. And again, l'chora, it seems that based on the Shulchan Aruch, based on you know the Mishnayos, it's forbidden to basically plant a garden during the 9 days. And this is generally what's accepted. Okay, that any kinds of you know making a garden or planting a garden or planting things in the garden which are done to make it look nice, okay, for beauty or for pleasure, etc., is generally assumed to be problem. It doesn't mean you can't water your plants during the 9 days. Obviously, you can water your plants, but the point is to actually plant new things, you know, to look nice. So that generally is should be avoided. So again, anything which is done in order to make sure that it's well kept is probably permitted. Anything which is done to you know as an addition to add is probably forbidden. It does make it look nicer, but at the same time, you also mow the lawn so that it doesn't, you know, look like my, you know, my backyard, which is just weeds everywhere. We still have to.
If you mow your lawn, it strengthens the grass.
Yeah, meaning it gets rid of the weeds.
It
yeah.
It actually makes it. If you don't mow your lawn, the grass might actually. What's the word? Decay.
Is that the word?
I don't like the word. That's not the right word.
Interesting.
But if you cut the grass, it actually will have grass gets from it.
Interesting.
So that's maintenance.
Great. When you say that I'll do a garden, particularly because this is time sensitive for us, do you have to wait until the 15th of Av, or can you just
that's after Tisha B'Av is fine. The only thing that would be a question to wait till 2 of, I think, is the question of having a court case with a non-Jew. That's the only one they discuss about when that prohibition has expired. But any of these other things are all permitted after Tisha B'Av, or at least after you know Chatzot of the 10th day, or whatever the case might be. So he quotes here Rav Ephraim Greenblatt, actually wrote a shu about this specifically, who basically you know talks about all the different planting things. Okay, again, he talks about grass and flowers and all the other kinds of things which are forbidden, but he says explicitly that basically pulling out weeds and again mowing the lawn also, any of these kinds of things are for an existing garden are permitted. Okay. In addition, also, if you ask from the Daniel Hyman perspective, is it permitted for a gardener to garden during the 9 days? The answer is that it's mutter. Okay, that's his parnasa. Okay, somebody whose parnasa is to be a gardener is permitted to work on his parnasa during the 9 days. Again, you may want to discuss, you know, make sure that the person that you're working for discuss with their posting that you know to make sure that it was permitted to do what they did. But from his perspective, it's certainly permitted for parnasa purposes to do any of those kinds of things. Okay, let's go on here. Sfardim also are machmir for weddings during the 9 days. Okay, even though Sfardim are not machmir during the 3 weeks, but during the 9 days, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly in Sif Beis that you can't have weddings during the 9 days. Okay, now we get to the really big things. Now I don't know what we're going to do. We're already almost out of time here. We have to decide how we want to approach this. But I'll just tell you what the things are, and we'll see how much we can cover. One is laundering and wearing clean clothes. Okay, one is eating meat and drinking wine. And the other one is basically bathing and showering. Okay, those are the main three activities that are subject to discussion. So I guess we'll start with laundering, and we'll see. You have to tell me what you want to do. I'm going to finish up or not. Okay, very quickly, laundering and wearing clean clothes. So here, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch and Siv Gimel, so he says that Shavuah Shechab Tisha B'Av Asur L'Saper U'L'Chabes. Okay, the week that Tisha B'Av falls, it's forbidden to take haircuts and to wash clothes. Even if you don't plan to wear it now, rather you only want to leave it till after Tisha B'Av, you're still not allowed to wash it, to launder during Shavuot Shechavah. Even if you only have one garment, it's still aser. Okay? Etc. So here, basically, the rule, again, is not based on Rosh Chodesh Av. Here, the rule is based on Shavuot Shechavah, based on the Mishnah in Tanis. And therefore, again, for Sfardim would be able to be Mekel until Shavuot Shechavah, which, again, this year, according to what we said before, this year Sfardim would be allowed to do, basically, laundry the entire week, the entire next week. Should be fine. That doesn't mean that Ashkenazi can give a Sephardi his clothes to wash for him. That probably would not be okay. But for a Sephardi, it seems to be that it'd be permitted. For Ashkenazim, very briefly, I just mentioned a couple points. So we said right now that even if you only have one pair of shirt or pants that are left, it's usher to wash, which you have to be careful about, that doesn't happen. The Mishnah Berurah does point out that when this context, And Sivkat on Chav Tes, the Mishnah Berurah says, Mishaim el Chalakachad Yesh Lahat of Chavis Mirash Chodesh Ara Shabbos. For this context, the Mishnah Berurah says you can be Mekel for even for an Ashkenazi until Rosh Hashanah Chalbo. Okay, I mean, if you only have one garment or, you know, everything is dirty, so in that case, you're allowed to be Mekel until Shavuot Chalbo. This is one of the cases where for Ashkenazim, the concept of Shavuot Chalbo is relevant. And this is one of the cases where many Achronim for Ashkenazim want to say that because in this situation, no, laundering is an Isser according to the Mishnah. It's a real Isser. It's not just a custom. It's a real Isser. Therefore, Ashkenazim cannot be Mekel during next week this year. Meaning, even though we said for Sfardim, many Sfardim hold that next week is not Shavuot Chalbo, but Ashkenazim, many Ashkenazim poskim say that for real Isurim, such as laundering, you can't. The next week would be considered Shavuot Chalbo. And therefore, you may be stuck. Okay, so try not to get stuck. Don't make sure you have enough clothes to deal with. Again, there are discussions of what to do if you're stuck, but we don't have time to get into it now, unfortunately. We can talk about it later if you like. Can you get clothes wet?
You can come and get clothes from either.
Right. Okay, so I have to see whether you're allowed to wear them. There is Rabbi Eider. This is the one thing I'll tell you. Rabbi Eider quotes in his little booklet. He quotes Rav Moshe, who wanted to say that basically, if you had clothes for the 9 days, and basically they all got dirty, either you didn't have enough clothes, and you prepared enough clothes, but they just weren't enough, or your child got them all dirty, whatever it was. So if you need to go to work, and basically, you know, there's concerns that you might get fired, or you might lose money, or it's going to be very embarrassing, etc., etc. So Rav Moshe apparently paskin that you can wash what you need in that case, b'shas adachak. So that there is one kula there that was mentioned by Rabbi Eider from Rav Moshe. There are questions, interesting questions. What about a stain? Can you wash a stain on your shirt without actually putting it through the laundry? So here it's interesting. There's different opinions about this. Many poskim actually were machmir about this, believe it or not. Okay, the Piskei Tshuva cites a number of poskim that, and Rav Vosner also was quoted in the Rav Harari Sefer and a whole bunch of other poskim in the Shmir Shas Kelchasa that actually felt that taking a stain off your shirt is forbidden. Okay, the only exception is basically if that's the shirts that you have and it's very recognized, it's very obvious and you're embarrassed to walk out in public, so then if it's a situation of embarrassment and that's your shirt, you don't have other options, then maybe it's permitted to do. But again, many poskim are machmir in general about stains. Rav Yisraeli from Merkez Rav, so he allowed it. I mean, he felt that even if you don't have other shirts, that's even if you do have other shirts, cleaning off a stain from your shirt is not the same thing as laundering. Okay. Again, today it seems strange. Why are people being machmir? But if you think about it, back in those days, basically, what was laundering for them? They took the water from the river and they put the shirt in or whatever it was. You know, it's not so different than taking water from a running faucet and putting it on your shirt. You know, it does make sense. You know, logically, why many people would be machmir for this, but it's very difficult because if you get stains, you know, you can't always change your shirt in the middle of the day. You know, so Lamai said there often is room to make it, if you know, people could tell. Don't look at mushroom. Okay. Okay. For children, there are discussions for children about whether you can launder for children. The Rama, a little later in the Sif, he wants to say that for children whose clothes get very dirty very quickly, the custom is to be lenient when necessary. Again, obviously we try to be machmir about this. If you have enough clothes, certainly you don't try to wash clothes for children during this time, but if you have to, there is room to be lenient, but you can't add in other clothes. Okay, that's what the poskim say, that we don't want you to forget about the avelos of the morning of the time period, so therefore you can only add in the clothes that you need for those children. Even today, when you just dump it all in the washing machine, the poskim seem to be not recommend that. There is a question of what age children, the heter for children is four. Is it age three? Is it age six or age nine? There are different opinions about this in terms of what age you can wash children's clothing for if you need to during that time. Interesting other points. We'll leave that out. Okay. We're almost out of time here. Very quickly, there's another question of whether you can wear clean clothes even if they're already washed before. So the Shulchan Aruch says clearly that you can't. Meaning, if you didn't wash your clothes during the 9 days, but they're already clean from beforehand, okay, can you wear them for the first time since they were clean during this time period? And the answer is no, you can't. However, for basically undergarments, case undershirts and socks and things like that. So in general, I mean, it's machlokas, but we generally paskin that that it's okay. Right. I mean, in these cases, especially where people, it's hot and people switch their clothes every day, for undergarments, it's generally assumed today that the custom is to be lenient, and you can wear them even right after they were washed. Okay. Rav Moshe passed in this way, according to Rabbi Eider and other posts came as well. The other question is, the other opinion is about wearing clean clothes. So let's say for shirts or pants, this is a discussion. Okay, you're not really supposed to wear freshly laundered shirts or pants during the 9 days or Shavuot Shechalva for Sfarim, which again, for this year for Sfarim is not a problem, but for Ashkenazim it would be. So here there's a discussion of what to do, and again, the practice that everybody knows, this is based on some Sfarim, believe it or not. Okay, the Kaf HaChaim and the Ben Ish Chai want to suggest, based on the Shulchan Aruch and Yoredeya, that if you put on your clothes even for a few minutes, or at least for a small amount of time beforehand, that's considered to be as if you wore them. So again, you know, the appropriate thing to do according to this, unless you've worn all your clothes beforehand, for clean clothes is basically to take, you know, the day before the Rosh Chodesh Av, which basically this year would be Thursday, basically take all your shirts and your pants that you plan to wear that are clean during the 9 days and put them on for a few minutes. Okay, ideally even more than a few minutes, but at the very least, put them on for a few minutes beforehand so that you can see that they're not actually clean clothes anymore. Okay, it takes a while, it's not so simple, but that's the recommended approach. It could be that if you didn't do that, you can still wear your clothing. There are leniencies in Hilchos Aveilus. There are Hashulchan there, talks about it a little bit. Maybe you could be Mekil, but L'chachila, it seems that it's better to do something like that. The other option is to have somebody else wear it beforehand. But that's, again, today people don't usually have other people wear their clothes beforehand, so that's not so good. There are some contemporary posts that held that maybe if you put your clothes on the floor and you jump on them for a few minutes, or let your kids jump on them for a few minutes, that already might make it not clean anymore. Certainly if you're talking about a shirt or pants, which actually are, you know, supposed to be folded properly and might get wrinkled, there may be room to allow that as well if you want to just jump on the clothes so that it looks wrinkled. So that, again, you may not look very nice, but it certainly, you know, may work halachically to allow that. Again, new clothes, we know already from the Shulchan Aruch and Siv Vav and Siv Zayin, new clothes you're not allowed to wear during this time period, in general. Old clothes that are torn or need repair or fixing, that contemporary posting have said is mutter. Your Moshe and the Kaf HaChaim both held that was mutter to fix clothes that you already have. Okay, that's not included in the prohibition. Okay, that's in terms of laundering. We didn't get to meat and wine, and we didn't get to bathing and showering. So tell me what you... Can you continue? Or stop. What do you say? Stopping? Okay. We say, so we'll stop here and we'll try to find another time to go through with these halachos. I already stopped. I already saved it. Yeah, I already saved it. Okay, so let's continue. Let's try to work on a little bit of the meat and wine questions and then a little bit of the bathing and showering. Okay, we're going to go a little faster here, so I'm not going to read everything inside. In terms of meat and wine, so obviously we know that there's a very famous custom to not have meat and wine during the 9 days. At this point, there are different opinions about whether it starts for Shavuot Shechalba or during the 9 days, even for Sfardim. This is already discussed in the Shulchan Aruch, in Sif Tes. He already mentioned there that some people start not eating meat or wine on Shavuot Shechalba, which this year means you could be Mekil. But there's another opinion in the Shulchan Aruch that you start from Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so even for Sfardim, there's different opinions. My impression is that most Sfardim are makil about this. The most Sfardim follow the first opinion in the Shulchan Aruch, which is that you can start only at Shavuot Shechalba, and therefore this year you wouldn't have to worry about it. Okay. Again, I always say, I didn't look. What is he? He's Machmer?
I think because he
mentions Minhag Yerushalayim from Rosh Chodesh. He says Minhag Yerushalayim from Rosh Chodesh. Okay, is that what Sfardim generally follow? Again, I didn't have a chance to look at Rav Avadya as usual. I forgot to look.
I always had this predicament, because I don't know which one to follow.
So you don't know. So we have to look then. Okay, I was under the impression that Sfardim are generally Mekil, that it's not that they don't follow Rosh Chodesh, they start from Shavuot Shechalba, which means this year would be they wouldn't have to do it at all. But I'll have to check again. Okay, so we'll start with for Sfardim. I apologize, I didn't have a chance to look. I don't know why the Sfardim always get left behind for me and my share, at least. I apologize. Anyway, the two reasons given why this is not, why we don't do this, is either because of Simcha, okay, we need wine, give you Simcha, or to remember the Korbanos on the base of Migdash, which involves obviously meat and wine. In terms of the parameters, what's meat and what's wine? Okay, so obviously meat is meat and wine is wine, but just a couple points. There is a discussion about what's considered, let's say you have a cholent, okay? Your cholent had meat in it, okay? And you have leftover cholent during, let's say, next week. Can you eat the potatoes and the barley from that meat cholent during the week? So the Shulchan Aruch actually allows here, in Sif Yud, he actually permits that. The Mishnah Berurah says the custom is to forbid it. So therefore, for at least for Ashkenazim, Ashkenazim generally are machmir about this. So any food that was cooked together with meat in the same dish generally is avoided. Again, for the Shulchan Aruch, it seems that it's permitted. Everybody agrees that if you simply cook power food in a meat pot, that's permitted. But that's not a question. That's definitely mutter. Okay. In terms of grape, in terms of wine, so generally speaking, the contemporary posts say that grape juice is included as well, even though grape juice doesn't always give you the exact same feel as wine does. But generally speaking, posts can assume that grape juice is the same thing, and therefore you should not have grape juice as well during the 9 days or Shavuot Shechalbo. Grape drink is mutter. Okay, grape drink is not, as you all know. Okay, grape drink is not real grape juice. Okay, it's all sorts of other stuff in there. So grape drink is permitted. Okay, I'm going to skip a few points along the way here. When it comes to Havdalah, so Havdalah, the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Yud says that it's permitted to make Havdalah on a cup of wine, and therefore Sfarim can make Havdalah on a cup of wine. That's a koshal mitzvah, koshal bracha, that's permitted. The Ramah is the one that says for Ashkenazim that our custom is not to do that. Okay, the Ramah says we, even for Havdalah, we don't drink the wine, instead we give it to a child. Okay, why? Because we don't need to drink it. If we don't need to drink it and you can give it to a child, then there's no reason why you should rely on the leniency of allowing it. However, the child that you can give it to is actually not so simple. Okay, everybody knows you give it to your child, but it's actually not so simple. The Mishnah Berurah already says this. It's clear in the Mishnah Berurah in Sif Katan Ayin that the child has to be actually old enough, how old, in order to be Yotze. The child actually has to be age, what'd you say? Take a guess.
12? 6.
Age chinuch. Okay, that's age 12. Age 6, meaning only a child that is age chinuch is allowed to drink the wine for you to be motzi you in, you know, in your bracha, that your bracha is not considered to be a bracha levatala. Okay. However, a child less than the age of chinuch is actually doesn't count. Okay, because for them, if they're not yet at the age of chinuch, your bracha counting for them means basically absolutely nothing. Okay, so that's important to note. If you don't have a child who's, let's say, age 6 yet, then you can't rely on what the Ramah is saying here. Okay, it doesn't help you at all. It basically is kibbutz bracha levatala. Say again?
The kid doesn't have da'at, it's like a
lucky da'at. He doesn't have da'at. Anybody else that's in the room is fulfilling their obligation with the bracha of the person making the Havdalah. The only question is that in order for it not to be a bracha levatala, so the person that drinks the wine has to be a person which, you know, can use a bracha in order to make the bracha, you know, a legitimate bracha. So the person drinking the bracha, the kid drinking the bracha is not being, you know, ki'ilu necessarily, in this case at least, he's not being motzi you directly in terms of drinking. Although again, that's also not so clear. I should take that back. It's not so clear. But the main point is that the bracha is for the child. And again, yeah, the question of whether the child can motzi you. So again, a child who's eich chinuchari, there is what to talk about. It does seem to be that it's that he can be. He can drink, and that's true. That's true in general for kiddush in general. Okay, if you need to, you're allowed to give a child to drink from kiddush. It's the same thing in chutz laretz when they make kiddush in shul Friday night. Okay, so we don't want to give it to an adult because an adult can't have kiddush makom suda with a whole meal at the shul when he's making kiddush Friday night. But the custom in general is to give it to a child. Same idea. The child can be, if he's an eich chinuch child, he can be. He's old enough to be able to be, you know, at least partially motzi you in terms of, you know, the making the bracha count for something. However, the child cannot be age 9, or I shouldn't say age 9, age where he can, you know, observe Avelus. Okay, once he's at the age where he can appreciate the concept of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, so then already he's too old, because then he also can't have wine. Okay, so basically what the Mishnah Berurah concludes is that the child has to be basically between age, roughly age 6, and, you know, he doesn't say age 9, but the age of Avelus is roughly age 9 or so, 9 or 10. So if you don't have that, so then the halacha is that you can drink it yourself. Okay, drink it yourself. But again, it's important to realize that. The Aruch HaShulchan has a different suggestion. He says even an adult can drink, but the adult should drink Chamer Medina. So if you want to make Havdalah on beer or whiskey or something like that, that's the Aruch HaShulchan, so they think that's another option. The other post can apparently disagree. They think that it's better to make it on wine and give it to the child if you have an option. And if not, you can drink it yourself. If you wanted to rely on the Aruch HaShulchan, you could. But that would be. But again, for Sfaradim, it's fine anyway. The Shulchan Aruch says that Sfaradim can drink the wine without a problem. Exceptions to the rule of eating meat during this time period, and very, very briefly, Shabbos, obviously, permitted to eat meat on Shabbos. There are some posts that allow you to taste Shabbos foods on Friday afternoon. Okay, now, is this really allowed? I don't know if it's really allowed, but there are some posts, including the Akla Yosef, this I wrote down from last year, based on the Arizal and others, that say that it's a mitzvah to taste food on Friday afternoon, so they felt that maybe it would be mutter to do that. Again, if you don't have the minhag to taste Shabbos food on Friday afternoon, I would not say that this is okay. If you do have the minhag, you know, it's iffy. Personally, I would not be a fan of it, but you know, as we see here, there are some that that do allow it. There's a similar machlokas after Shabbos from Lava Malka that the Kaf HaChaim wanted to say that maybe it's mutter to eat meat, leftover meat from Shabbos at the Lava Malka. The standard Ashkenazi psak is not to allow that. Okay, most Ashkenazim do not let that go. There's an interesting case somebody asked me about a year or two ago. Is let's say the kids need to eat, let's say, late Shabbos, you know, you're either making late Shabbos or even early Shabbos, and the kids need to eat early, okay? So the kids need to eat at 5:30 or whatever, and Shabbos, you know, in the summertime, it's hard, they can't stay up or whatever it is, so they want to eat, you want to give them the Shabbos food. Can you give them the meat Shabbos food at 5:30 in the afternoon on Friday? Interesting question, right? So, I wasn't sure at first, and then I found, actually, that the Rav Moshe actually had a chew about it in Igros Moshe. I forgot to write down where it was. But it's, I think, in Igros Moshe, Chelek Dalad, somewhere or other. I have it here, actually. Chelek Dalad, Simon Chaf Aleph. Okay, letter Dalad there. He actually discusses that case, and they asked him at first about Friday afternoon in general, which he basically says Friday afternoon after Chatzos is not good enough. That's not a good enough reason to be Matzir, at least for standard Ashkenazi poskim. But then he says, if it's hard for them to wait until after nightfall in the summertime, so if they generally have their meal, you know, beforehand, he says it's permitted within an hour or two before accepting Shabbos, it's permitted to feed the meat at that point. Okay, so that's a good kula to be aware of if you need it. I'd never thought of it before, but it's an interesting question. So he says that's permitted, and that I saw also in the Nitei Gavriel. He quotes that as well. Okay, Sudas Mitzvah is generally permitted if you have a Suda for a Bris Milah or a Pidyon HaBen. It's permitted to have meat at that such a Suda during the 9 days. The most famous Heder is, of course, of a Siyum. Okay, if you make a Siyum on a Masechet of a Gemara, or a Seder of Mishnayos, then it's generally permitted to make a Siyum and to have meat at the Siyum. Rav Moshe, on a different Shuvah, wants to say that even if you learn a Sefer of Tanakh with Mefarshim, that's also considered to be legitimate, and you can make a Siyum with meat on that as well. There's a discussion about if you don't finish at the right time, and let's say you finished a week or two before, or you would have finished a week after, and you did it faster, is that okay? So the Mishnah Berurah and Sifkat Arayin Gimel is not such a fan of that. He doesn't think you should really change your speed in order to make a Siyum. He says that's not right. But the Piskei Teshuvos quotes a lot of big tzaddikim, and you know, that basically said that they wanted to, you know, it becomes a big deal, and you want to be marba ahava, you know, love, and you know, people get together for a simcha, finishing and Siyum, etc. They felt that maybe it's okay. So the custom today is many people are making on this. They, you know, often will wait to do a Siyum or make it a little faster. And again, is it the best thing? I don't know if it's the best thing, but it's often done. So, you know, it's, there are some those that do allow that.
Does it mean that you can only eat at the Siyum itself, or you can eat all that?
It means only at the Siyum itself. Okay. And it's not clear that everybody can enjoy it. Basically, again, the custom here is to be a little more lenient today, but on the books, it seems to be that basically people that, you know, certainly people that have to come to the meal. Okay, they don't come to the meal. The Mishnah Berurah says you can't send food home from the meal to somebody else who's at home. That's not allowed. But anybody who's generally shy to the Suda, the Mishnah Berurah says that anybody who would have come to the Siyum any other time other than the 9 days, you know, certainly can come and participate during the 9 days as well. But if you invite the whole world and half the people you don't even know and they never would have come any other time, that's questionable. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's questionable. Mm-hmm. Rav Moshe said that if you're doing a Siyum, let's say, in a camp or yeshiva, then that's fine because they all eat together anyway. So certainly you can do a Siyum during that time. During Shavuot Shechalbo, which again this year is a question for this year, we can be Mekil, but Shavuot Shechalbo, there's the Ramah says maybe you can only have a minyan. Okay. You can't have, besides the family and, you know, the Baal Simcha himself, you can only have a minyan of people. That's what the Ramah says. But again, it could be that anybody who would have eaten with you, anybody who eats at your table normally would be included. Okay, we're just talking about if you have all your friends come over, then during Shavuot Shechalbo that may be a problem. However, this year it might be fine anyway, because then for Sfaradim there's no Shavuot Shechalbo, and for this point, even for Ashkenazim, because the whole thing of meat and wine is a custom, the only halacha of meat and wine is at the Suda Mafsekas, so even for Ashkenazim this year there's room to be Mekil during Shavuot Shechalbo, even according to those that are Machmir. Okay, the famous, you know, the most important question of if you came to the Siyum but you missed the actual Hadron, okay, you came a few minutes late, can you still participate? So Rabbi Eider says, consult your Rav, but then in the Hebrew footnotes, he thinks it's mutter. Okay. Now, because of the case I mentioned before, he says you can't send food home to somebody who didn't come. The implication is that if he's there, he just came a few minutes late, maybe it would be okay. So if he's still part of the Simcha, the minug is to be Mekil for somebody that missed the actual Siyum part of it and came shortly afterwards. There's a very interesting tshuva, which we're not going to go into now, but Rav Avadya and Yechav Adas, there's a very interesting tshuva about restaurants. Can restaurants or supermarkets that sell meat remain open during time period of the 9 days. Okay, so basically he's mekil for a number of reasons, despite the concern of lifnei iver causing people to sin. He basically says for a number of reasons that it's mutter. Okay, that's generally what's followed today. Again, put it this way, some stores, some restaurants do take off during the 9 days if they're meat. They're not open at all. But those that are open and under rabbinical supervision, the generally accepted custom is that it's halachically permitted because of, you know, there are people that are allowed to eat meat during the 9 days, maybe for Shabbos, if it's at least a supermarket, and there are other considerations as well. Okay, last point, unless you had a question.
Yeah, I had this question at a client, they have a kosher catering.
Right.
Right.
So it's a good question. So again, sometimes the hechsher is not on when they serve the food; it's only on the kashrus of the food itself. You might have to find out whether they actually, you know, sanction that or not. But again, according to this tshuva Rav Avadia, it's fine because of the fact, number one, for Sfaradim you have, you know, shivosh chalbo. Before that, you don't have to be machmir. And again, the other things he mentioned is that the customers may be weak enough that they're chola, so which is more mekel. Because of the fact that this is only a custom in the first place, lifnei iver may not actually apply for a custom to cause somebody to violate. A custom may not be the word, you know, may not be a problem with lifnei iver. That's a discussion. Also, it could be if they don't go here, they may go somewhere else, which is worse. Meaning they may go to a trade place. So, you know, Rav Avadia was mekel. Rav Cook also had a tshuva, who was mekel about a similar case. Okay, last point. Yeah.
Parameters. It might be obvious to everyone listening. But since you didn't say grape juice versus wine, you didn't say specifically chicken versus meat.
So generally speaking, it's assumed that chicken and meat have the same status, halacha l'maisa, and we're machmer on both. If somebody has to have meat during the 9 days for health reasons, whatever that might be, so there I saw, I think Rabbi Eider mentioned that maybe from Ramosha or whatever, that there may be a slight preference to give them chicken rather than meat if that's an option. Okay, but in general, the rule is the same for both. Same with that chibitin today. Same for all intents and purposes, the exact same way as meat and milk, even though one is the rabbanon and one is the raisa. Okay, last topic of bathing and showering. And I have to finish up anyway because I have to go to Marav. Bathing and showering and swimming. Okay, so here also there's two opinions of the Shulchan Aruch in the Siftez Zion about whether these restrictions start already on Rosh Chodesh or Shavuot Shechal with this. I for sure don't remember what the Sfaradim hold about this. Do you remember offhand? Was they? Unfortunately, again, I didn't look, and I don't remember exactly what the rules for Sfaradim. I'll have to take a look again. But again, this year, Lechora, it wouldn't matter anyway. Okay, meaning for Sfaradim this year, then next week, if you make it for Ashkenazim, we'd be machmir from Rosh Chodesh. Basically, the Shulchan Aruch says you can't use hot water to wash. The Mishnah Berurah and the Ramah add in that the custom is that cold water also is not allowed for washing the whole body. However, of course, I think most of us take showers during the 9 days, so what do you do? So basically the heter today is based on the concept of the Ramah, who says that for Tzorach Mitzvah, by implication, maybe for any case where you're showering or bathing not for pleasure, okay, if it's for medical purposes or for mitzvah purposes, it is generally assumed to be permitted. Therefore, many contemporary poskim say that today, when people shower every day or every other day for cleanliness purposes, halachically that's permitted, and that's what's, you know, what's explained in Hilchos Avelis as well. And here also, Rav Moshe and many others say that if it's hot outside in the summertime, it's generally assumed that it's permitted to at least shower with cold water as much as you would shower, you know, regularly during this time. Hot water is generally not permitted. Okay, cold water is what's permitted. There's a discussion about soap and shampoo as well. There are those that are machmen soap and shampoo. I think the custom in general is to be mekel, although I can't say 100%, but my impression is the custom, and I would say it's mutter. And then this is also found in Rabbi Eider, that he felt that soap and shampoo may be permitted, though again, in English he doesn't say it straight out, not clear, and then in Hebrew he says it makes sense that maybe it should be permitted if you use soap and shampoo normally, because again, for us today, that's considered to be a way of keeping us clean, rather than just simple luxury. For children, it's generally considered to be permitted to bathe and shower. For Friday afternoon, there's a big discussion about whether showering on Friday afternoon is permitted with Kavod Shabbos. The Ramah says that it's not. The Mishnah Berurah says that's true even if you always shower on Friday afternoon. Today, though, based on what we said before, you know, the custom is that many people do shower on Friday afternoon because we bathe more frequently anyway. Therefore, if you shower every week for Shabbos, Rav Eider, quoting Rav Moshe and Rav Henkin, want to say that it's mutter even with hot water to shower on Friday, and soap and shampoo would be mutter as well. Mishnah Berurah points out that if Rosh Chodesh Av is on Friday, which is what happens this year, I mean, usually you only have Shabbos Chazon, you have one Shabbos during the 9 days. This year there's two. Okay, there's Rosh Chodesh Av and the second day of Av, and, you know, ninth of Av. So Rosh Chodesh Av, this year, on Friday, the Mishnah Berurah says in Sifkatan Peites that it's permitted to shower and bathe in hot water on Friday, basically this week on Friday, if you normally do so on Friday because of the fact that it's Rosh Chodesh and it's not Shabbos Chazon. So he's making on good cool. According to everybody, that would be permitted. In terms of swimming, it's generally assumed that swimming is not allowed during the 9 days. If you have a medical condition, it may be permitted. I don't know so much here in Israel, but in America, I remember there was always questions in the camps about instructional swim versus free swim. I don't know. A lot of people said that instructional swim was okay. I mean, a lot of the camps allowed instructional swim. I don't know if you remember this.
Free swim is not.
So again, I don't know. I don't know if any Rabbanim said it was okay. I'm not sure. My impression is that instructional swim is also a problem. Okay. In general, the main heter is for medical swimming. Okay. And you need to swim in order for certain to exercise or for other medical conditions that it's important to swim. Other than that, again, yes, it's not exactly a tanug, but the bottom line is that people, even if they're doing instructional swim, it is enjoyable for most people to go swimming in the water. So even, yes, you have to
teach your kid.
What'd you say?
I mean, instead of kids, one of the mitzvahs you have to do for your kid to teach them how to swim.
So that's
the camp. I don't know if that's the heter they use.
So that's a question. It's machlokas in the Gemara whether there's a mitzvah to swim. Even if you hold that it's a mitzvah to swim, is that the kind of mitzvah that would say that instructional swim to teach how to swim is permitted during the 9 days? It has to be now for the mitzvah. I don't know. I hear, but I don't know. Personally, when I was looking around, I didn't see that as a heter. Okay, I didn't see that as a heter. So I would be reluctant to use that as a heter. But I know that it's very, at least in Chutz Laaretz, it's very common to use that as to allow instructional swim during the 9 days. Again, it could be that the alternative is to do. They have no alternative. They can't. There's too much swim. They can't do without it. I don't know. Do you ever familiar with any rabbanim that said that it was mutter offhand?
I know these camps had rabbis that were assigned to the camps. I always assumed these rabbis were approving what was going on in the camps. I cannot quote that.
Okay, we'll have to take a look. Again, I didn't see it so much, but I'll look a little more. Again, I don't know. Based on logic, I don't know. I think it's iffy. But I guess if you say that it's, really, if it really is a mitzvah to learn how to swim, and you have to do it during this week, so. But again, the problem is normally, meaning the other cases of where mitzvah, they talk about mitzvah is basically something which is, means that you're not doing it for pleasure purposes, whereas here, the kids like to go in the water, they like to swim. Yes, it happens to be that they're teaching them what to do, but, does that take away from the pleasure, of swimming in general just because they're being instructed? I don't know. Does that mean it's mutter because they're fun on mitzvah? Maybe. Again, really a mitzvah? Also not so clear. Okay, again, different opinions about that. It's not so posh. It definitely is a mitzvah. So, okay, we'll leave that as a tzarachian, but... that's the last thing. The only other thing I was going to mention is that, again, in terms of things that are dangerous, we mentioned this already last week, there's a special, idea not to do dangerous things during this time period, not just the 9 days, but during the 3 weeks as well, but especially during the 9 days, surgery, okay, again, maybe, if possible, it's better to be avoided during this time. There's a whole discussion about flying, whether you're not allowed to fly during the 9 days. I don't know. So I found in the Rav Harari Sefer that he quoted Rav Vosner, who strongly recommended against flying. The Nitzei Gavriel, this Sefer here, Rav Gavriel Zinner from Brooklyn, he also wasn't really thrilled with flying during the 9 days, unless it was going to Eretz Yisrael. But the truth is, both of them say that even during the 3 weeks, it shouldn't be done. So nobody follows that today. So I don't know. Other than that, most postmen didn't really talk about it so much. My impression is that it's not such a big deal, mainly because today, there are actually a lot of other activities that are much more dangerous than flying. Okay, driving, at least in this country, is probably more dangerous than flying. Flying is pretty safe these days. So you have to say, basically, it's not that the flying is dangerous, it's that if something would go wrong, the chances of God for being a terrible tragedy if there was a flying accident are much more, likely than if there would be a car accident, which, yes, sometimes, God forbid, there are serious injuries, but often car accidents just, minor scrapes on the car. It's not, as serious of consequences. But again, most people, the custom today is to generally avoid flying during the 9 days if possible, but if there's any reason why I need to fly during the 9 days, I wouldn't be so crazy about it. I absolutely can't fly during the 9 days. It's the way of the situation. If it's an important need, certainly going to visit Israel for people that live in Chutz Laaretz is probably permitted if needed. And if that's the time that works out, if it's a lot of money, if other reasons, I think there's a lot of room to be making on this point. But just to mention, it is something which does come up. Okay, we'll stop here and see you next week.